For those in recovery, support from friends and family often leads to better outcomes. Here's to those who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. Visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose for information about treatment options and how to support those experiencing addiction.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Ready to expand your financial game? NerdWallet can coach you on smart strategies like choosing investments, finding your next credit card, and setting a budget that works for you. Score major points towards your summer vacation by learning expert tips for choosing a high-yield savings account and how to build wealth by investing in index funds. Slide into summer with smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app. Future you will thank you.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Play ball! It's 30 with Murdy, with your host, Sweeney Murdy.
Welcome to another edition of 30 with Murdy. On this episode, I'll look at this year's Hall of Fame class from a little different perspective. First of all, congratulations to Mariano Rivera, Mike Messina, Edgar Martinez, and Roy Halladay. Also to Veterans Committee selections Lee Smith and Harold Baines. Now, there is some controversy over the selection of some of these men. That's inevitable, it seems, with public debate over the election process. But that's a different subject and doesn't change the fact that all these men will share a stage in Cooperstown in July, and then will be a part of the Hall of Fame forever. They've earned the respect that comes with that, rather than belittling of their careers that appear mostly for the sake of argument. What stood out to me about this year's class is that it features heavily the specialty part of the game that came about over the last 40 to 50 years. Closer and designated hitter are two positions that were created out of the game's evolution. One of them was legislated, the DH back in 1973, American League only. While there are still teams that prefer to fill that lineup spot with different players over a season, the teams that have consistently received the best production from the DH spot are the ones that employ one very good hitter in that role for the majority of the at-bats. Think David Ortiz with Boston, Victor Martinez with Detroit, and of course, Edgar Martinez, who has his name on the award that goes to the best DH every year, as voted by the media. The closer, on the other hand, evolved out of strategy, not a rule change. It was limited for a while and eventually came to be part of the standard formula for every team, manager, and front office. You need to have a closer. The best ones started to get paid like it, and now the best of the best are getting plaques in Cooperstown. So with two closers and two designated hitters being inducted this summer, here are two conversations about them. In this episode, I share with you two separate discussions. Coming up, I'll talk about the DH with the first man ever to come up to the plate as a DH back in 1973, former Yankee Ron Blumberg. But we begin with some talk about Mariano Rivera, Lee Smith, and the appreciation for the closer, with John Franco, who racked up 424 saves for the Reds and the Mets in a 20-year career. Franco ranks fifth on the all-time saves list and is first among left-handers. Here is part one of this week's episode, the closer discussion with Johnny Franco. Johnny, first thing I want to ask you about is what your thoughts were when you saw... I mean, I knew you knew Mariano was going into the Hall of Fame. He gets 100%, and now you get to look back on his career and everything that it meant. What did it mean to you as a guy who shared the position and watching him across town when you saw and heard all the things about Mariano this week?
Well, I was just so happy for him. I mean, it's a no-brainer that he would, you know, go in, and adds 100%, also a no-brainer. I mean, he was the best of the best. He should be up there on Mount Rushmore with all the rest of the best. But you know, he's the best relief pitcher ever. What he accomplished during the season and obviously during the playoffs and World Series, I don't think will ever happen again. And just the person that he is, you know, off the field, how charitable he is, always smiling and always respectful for everyone. And you know, me being across town with the Mets and being in the same position, I could respect what he did and how he did it. And of course, it's a tough position, and he's done it so long and consistency so long that you know, he deserves it. Absolutely.
Johnny, what did you like about the way he did his job that maybe the rest of us don't see or pay attention to? I mean, you know the routine. You know about coming in into tough situations in the ninth inning, big crowds, and trying to get out some of the best hitters. You know, what we see is one thing. What you see is maybe something else. What did you pick up from what he did and how he did it?
Well, I saw a couple of things. One, he's emotional. He's not emotional. He's had the same. You wouldn't know if he was struck out three guys or gave up three home runs. His facial expressions are the same. He stood within himself all the time. The thing that impressed me the most was his location and his consistency to throw that cutter in and hitting his spots in and out, day in and day out. You know, obviously, every once in a while, he might have a bad game. And I remember a couple of years ago, I don't know how long back it was, but he blew maybe two or three games, and right away they started thinking that he was done. You know, as a reliever, you're going to have those hiccups along the way. But Mariano, he didn't have too many hiccups in his career. And I was just impressed the way he handled himself on the field, off the field, during high-pressure situations, just stayed even-keeled and didn't get too high, didn't get too low. And then when the end result was, when you win the World Series, you can see all that exhaustion come out of him, and then he could just relax a little bit. But he was a constant professional. His mannerisms were always the same, and he carried himself on the field with an unbelievable presence. And, you know, when opposing hitters saw him come in, they weren't too happy.
Yeah, and I think there's something that those of us watching the games, and I think the guys in his own dugout appreciated, and I hope you'll understand what I'm getting at here, but the clean ninth inning, he had some ridiculous number of 1-2-3 saves in the ninth inning. You know, every closer has a high wire act to deal with, and you had your share of them. How impressive was it to watch a guy who can come in and not have to deal with that as often as the rest of you guys did?
It was very impressive. I mean, like you said, you know, I've had my share. I wish I had his formula. I wish he bottled that so I could steal it from him. But he was just, coming in 1-2-3 made it look so easy. And the thing that I am most impressed about him, his pitch count. He would always keep his pitch count low. You know, even if he struck out three guys in the inning, his pitch count might be 11 pitches, 12 pitches, which was, you know, unheard of. And he might have an inning where he give up three ground balls on that nasty cutter. So that's, you know, the thing I'm impressed about. He really didn't have too many hiccups in the ninth inning. He made it look so easy. And, you know, as a relief pitcher, as someone who's done the job that he has done, I was very, very impressed over the years watching him do it day in and day out and how easy he made it look.
Yeah, what were the things you guys talked about when you guys were able to get together about your craft and how you did it?
Just basically, you know, say, hey, you're doing a great job, you know, stay healthy. You know, I used to tell him that cutter's nasty. I remember when his last year with the Yankees, I caught the first pitch from him in his last day at Citi Field, and I went out there and I shook his hand and I said, hey, man, I love what you did. I love what you do, and you are the best. And he just had a big smile and said, thanks, I appreciate it. But, you know, we were just talking about, you know, how tough the job was. And sometimes, you know, I always compare the relief pitchers, closers, as field goal kickers. When you do your job, everybody says it's great. But when you miss that one field goal or you blow that save, that's the one they always remember. So he didn't have too many missed field goals.
Yeah, but we remember those. You know, those. It's funny because I remember a few years ago, somebody at MLB was putting together a special and they asked me about his milestone saves. And they started asking me questions about what I remembered about numbers 200, 300, 400. I couldn't remember a thing. I mean, they were all pretty much businesslike, but you remember the blown ones because some of them came in big spots and they were so rare that they stood out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's I always say to myself, even with myself and my own career, that I remember the ones that you blow, but you don't remember the ones that you save. So and I always you say there's always more good than bad, and Mariano had so much good that you can't remember the bad too much.
Yeah, there's another closer who's going to get to go into the Hall of Fame this summer too, Lee Smith. You competed against him for a long time. What do you think seeing him get his due with the committee that elected him back in December?
I'm so happy for him, and I think Lee Smith should have been in a long time ago. You know, at our jobs, what we did, the game at the time that we played, the game became a specialty where the closers came in there. And for us closers to be, I don't want to say punished, but not being recognized as a specialty position, because the managers really relied on that closer at the end of the game. And I think that, you know, Lee Smith should have been brought in and being elected a long time ago, and I'm so happy for him. He's such a great guy. He had a great career. I competed against him, saw him a number of times, And who knows, maybe that'll open the door for guys like myself and Billy Wagner later on down the road.
Yeah, there's some love going for closers now with these two guys. You know, it's a little unfair with Mariano because it's like, you know, that's like electing Babe Ruth to a Hall of Fame. You know, not everybody exactly. is going to measure up to that standard. So what is the standard or what should it be? I mean, you know, Mariano had everything going for him. He compiled saves and he won championships. Trevor Hoffman had a ridiculous number of saves. Lee Smith had a huge number and was the career leader for a very long time. You have the other guys from a different era like Suter and Fingers and Gossage who they have some championships to their name too and a different type of compiling of saves. What, you know, there aren't that many of you guys. And it is a real position, Johnny, and it's being recognized that way. But how do you find that best of the best group?
Well, I feel that, you know, just like with hitters, you know, 500 home runs, 3,000 hits, you know, that was the benchmark. And then pitchers, you know, 300 wins or you know, 5 or 6 Cy Youngs or whatever. As a reliever, I think, you know, 400 saves, probably 350 saves, somewhere along that line would be considered, you know, Hall of Fame status. I mean, year after year that you do it because it's pretty tough to do. And when you have a benchmark like that, you know, sets a goal for the players itself. I mean, you know, I got 424 saves and I played 20 something years. I mean, if you look at Phil Negro and Don Sutton, they have 300 wins and they played over 20 years, and you know, they got into the Hall of Fame in that way. You know, they combined their numbers over the years. So I'm just thinking somewhere between 350, 400 that would be a benchmark and to be considered.
Billy Wagner hasn't gotten a lot of support, and part of it's the crowded ballot, but also part of it's just this, you know, I think this idea that we're talking about of where closers fall. You know, I know you got to see Billy up close a little bit too. I mean, what did you like about him and his candidacy?
I mean, if you talk about Billy, I mean, just go back to myself. I didn't even get to stay on the ballot for a year. I had 4.8%.
Yep.
So I didn't even get to stay on the ballot for a year. But Billy, I think Billy's numbers are pretty up there with the top of the top. I mean, his strikeout ratio, his saves, he's maybe 2 or 3 behind me or 1 or 2 behind me, something like that. He was very impressive. But then again, you know, I don't know how many. Lee Smith hasn't won too many championships, and Billy hasn't been on too many championship teams, and I haven't been on too many championship teams. So most of the guys that are in there, except for Trevor, I believe, most of them have World Series appearances or World Series championships. So maybe that's a benchmark that they're looking at also. But Billy impressed me. You know, he's a little guy like me, but he threw 96 to 98, and he was consistent year in, year out also.
Yeah, and I think part of it I also tend to think of is what you mentioned earlier. It's like the field goal kicker mentality. You know, you don't get a lot of credit for doing your job in your position. You know, it's the game. There's already a lead when you come in, and your job is to just finish it out. And it's harder than it sounds, but when you don't do your job is when you get noticed.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of guys over the years, you know, the 20-plus years that I played, have come in the league and have, you know, 1 or 2 great years who've put up the numbers, but the consistency over the years of this 7 to 10 to 15 years, it's you don't see that anymore. And when we played, guys like Mariano and Lee Smith, myself, Billy Wagner, and Trevor Hoffman, consistently year in and year out, we put up those 30 plus saves, where now you don't see it as much, guys playing, you know, 10, 12 years doing that. So, you know, it is what it is, and you just got to, hopefully down the road, things will get better.
Yeah, you know, I like that point you made because I think a lot of people around baseball, and it's true, look at a bullpen and say, you know, you can pick a pitcher in a bullpen and have almost anybody get 30 saves during the course of a season, you know, good major league pitcher because of the way the game's set up. But the problem is finding a guy to do it for 5 or 8 or 10 years. That's where it becomes hard. And, you know, I don't know that you can really foresee this, but, you know, you've broken this, you know, the ceiling a little bit here. Guys are starting to get in. The DHs are starting to get some love. You know, it's been 40, 50
Absolutely.
Years for your specialty positions in the game, and it's about time they're represented. So do you feel like there's, you know, like you said, you're off the ballot, but you know, whether another one of these committees or something like that, you might get a little more opportunity just to have your career looked at. Do you feel like it's getting better, or are we just recognizing, hey, these handful of guys were far and above better than anybody else?
I think it's getting better. And hopefully you get recognized. Look, you got starting pitchers who have 300 wins. You have hitters who have 500, 700, whatever home runs in there. You have guys who are over 3,000 hits, 3,500 hits. You got closers. Mariano's got 600 saves. He's the all-time number one closer for right-handers. I'm the all-time closer for left-handers, and I'm not in there. So something's not right here, but it is what it is. I can't, you scratch your head. But I think finally it's being recognized, specialty guys, you know, like Edgar Martinez, great, great hitter. I'm so glad that he got in, because we were put in that position by our managers and by baseball. And at the time, you know, the DH, and at the time, you know, Tony La Russa, he's the one that started all this with using Eckersley one in at a time, and everybody just, you know, piggybacked on him and said, hey, this looks like a pretty damn good idea. And they got their best relief pitcher at the end of the game to come in and be their closer. And that's how it all started. So for us to not to be recognized just because we're doing our job, and that's what we're doing, it's a shame sometimes.
Yeah, and La Russa is in the Hall of Fame too.
Exactly.
And Joe Torre's probably in the Hall of Fame because he had Mariano Rivera, and I think he'd be the first one to admit that.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. When you got a guy like him finishing up your games, you're not going to lose too many games.
And now for a discussion on the designated hitter, with the first one ever, former Yankee Ron Blumberg. He's the first one, only by chance, really. On opening day, 1973, Yankees-Red Sox at Fenway Park was the first game on the American League schedule. Everything else started later. And the top of the first, Louis Tiant loaded the bases with two outs to bring the sixth hitter in the order up in that first inning. Blumberg walked to drive in a run, and in a game the Yankees lost 15-5, Blumberg went 1-for-3 and ended up with his bat in the Hall of Fame. With Edgar Martinez and Harold Baines being elected into the Hall this year, here's a conversation with the first DH, Ron Blumberg. Apologies for the audio quality here. I hope you'll stick with it to hear Ronnie's story. Ronnie, I just want to start with you and just ask what you think when you look at Edgar Martinez and Harold Baines and the fact that two designated hitters are going to go into the Hall of Fame this year.
Well, 45 years ago, nobody ever thought that the DH was even a position player. Everybody looked at it as basically a gimmick. And after the first year, I thought it was a gimmick. I never thought it was going to last. The more and more the years pass, you have to start thinking this is going to end up like relief pitchers. Because back in the day, they wouldn't even have a relief pitcher to go into the Hall of Fame because they thought that a relief pitcher wasn't a nine-inning pitcher, so they looked at that as a head pitcher. But when Harold Baines went in and Edgar Martinez went in, it really solidified the position. I've had, quite a few interviews about that. And, we all joke about it. You and I, over the years, 50% of the people love it, 50% of the people hate it. And the National League will never adopt it. But I think now, because two of the DHs got in, and probably a third with David Ortiz, he's a shoo-in to go in. So it's an everyday, really an everyday a position player. The National League's really going to have to think about this to adopt the rule, because it's an everyday position now. So it's been fun for the last 45 years, and now I'm a whole player. I'm not a half a player now. I'm a whole player.
I like the idea that, that they're getting some recognition now, but I think it's important to note also that there are some players that are already in the Hall of Fame that have benefited by this Paul Molitor probably doesn't get into the Hall of Fame if he's not allowed to DH for a number of years and get himself past 3,000 hits and then some. I look at guys like Dave Winfield and Eddie Murray, who were terrific players, and I would think that they'd be Hall of Famers anyway, but being able to DH allowed him to stay around a little bit longer and pick up a couple of extra magic numbers for their Hall of Fame case. So as much as they're getting their due now, I think they've probably had a little bit of recognition earlier with those guys being able to lengthen their careers.
Well, I totally agree with you, Twinny. You know, if you look at Reggie Jackson, it's the same way. So the DH is, back when I played, it was basically for the old broken down players. The guys that they wanted to give some at bats to, some excitement back to the American League, because that's why they adopted it. Because, you know, they wanted some more offense to play. And now, if you look at all these players now, you know, I mean, being a kid, it's not all that bad. If you look at what the Yankees did last year with Stanton, you look at them, what they have done with Aaron Judge a little bit, and Sanchez. There's a lot of different things you can do with the DH. When the National League, they wanted to strategize. They wanted the pitchers to be able to go up there and to bunt the ball. If you look at the National League now, and, you know, being in the National League now like I'm in now in Atlanta, and you watch the Braves, 90% of the Braves pitchers can't even hit. They can't even bunt. And you watch the pitchers, you know, hit. They don't bunt. They take two bunts and they try to hit home runs. And that's what they do. So when the American League has to play the National League in a game, I mean, it's a joke. They had, you know, the players to get into. The knockout was one big thing where, you know, he had to hit, and he just didn't go one or hamstring thing. He pulled two up, and, you know, a few of the guys pitched to hit. But even in the minor league, sweetie, they don't hit. Even when they get drafted out of high school or college, pitchers don't hit. So, I mean, it's totally changed. So, you know, I'm going to call myself in 1973 how a lot of people look at it as a joke. But it's no joke anymore. It's a position player. It's solidified with Harold Baines get in and Andrew Martinez to get in. And I'm so happy for them because they're just not, you know, great ball players. You know, they are the HOF. They are the Hall of Fame guys. And I think it's going to be a lot more people and a lot more people going to be just thrown in to be the deal. You know, I just got back from Yankee Stadium again. And, you know, there was coaches down there. And I know they want to do everything they can with Gary Sanchez as being a catcher. Here's a guy that, to me, is probably one of the best hitters on the team when he's brought. But if you look at last year when he was catching and then he was thrown into a DH, it really messed him up. So maybe one day Gary Sanchez will be the full-time DH of the New York Yankees. And really, that's really not that bad, where a guy like Gary Sanchez can hit 30 home runs and drive in on his RBI and hit to 280 or 290. That's the type of hitter he is. And he might use that. And that's a possibility. And that's, to me, that's a good possibility eventually if he doesn't do real well in catching.
What do you think back now when you look back at that game? You mentioned that people thought it was a joke and it was a gimmick. The opening day, 1973, Yankees are playing the Red Sox, and it's at Fenway Park. So you're batting in the top of the first. I want to ask you a couple of things. First of all, how'd you find out that you were going to be the DH that day? Was it just that morning when you went to see the lineup card? And then what did you react to? And take me back to that first inning of how it all came about, because I think really about of Luis Tiant's wildness is the only thing that made you the answer to the trivia question, because he got two outs, he gave up a double and two walks, and that brought you were the sixth hitter in the lineup that day, yet you came up in the top of the first inning because of Tiant's wildness. Tell me about everything in that atmosphere there.
Well, the first question, how did I find out about it? I had a hamstring pull in spring training. And about 4 days before we were supposed to break camp to go up to Boston, Ralph Howell and Dick Howell and Elston Howard came up to me and asked me how was my hamstring. And, you know, back then, you know, I was coming off a pretty decent season in 72. And, you know, I wanted to play. I mean, God, indeed. I mean, I'm here to play. So I told him I was okay to hit. And, you know, we had the DH down in spring training, and it was like, it was funny. You know, whoever wanted to be the DH, it's like, you know, you're playing a top Warner baseball. You're playing Sandlot baseball. You know, who wants to hit for the pitcher now? You know, I mean, it was like that. And, you know, Ralph put in different guys to be the DH. So I was, when I was down at spring training, I pulled a hamstring and it's a right-handed pitcher. Louis Tiant is going to be pitching up in Boston. And can I hit? I said, yes. He said, you're the DH. So, you know, I get to Boston, come to the ballpark, look at the lineup card, and I saw my name on the lineup card, being the DH, batting six up in Fenway Park. But it's really funny that the pitcher that was pitching that day was by far the best hitting pitcher, one of the best hitting pitchers in the American League, by the name of Mel Stottlemyre.
Yeah.
And Mel came up to me and he saw, you know, I mean, Mel was so used to hitting his whole career, and he came up to me and said, how in the world you want to hit for me? Where, you know, I'm almost a lifetime 250 hitter, whatever he said to me, whatever. And I said, I don't know, like that. So we made a joke about it. Hmm. And so basically, came to the ballpark, got in the first inning. It was 30 degrees in Fenway Park. I'm freezing to death, taking batting practice. They would not let me take any fielding practice at first base because of my hamstring. And I remember Elston Howard said, oh, just stay warm, go to the bench and sit down. And, you know, you in Fenway Park, you know, it's freezing down there. there's no room to move around in. I mean, there's no tunnel to run up to the clubhouse. He told me to sit down. So I'm sitting down next to Hauser and Ellie, and, you know, the game started. They announced the lineup, and they said DH for, well, they go up to the Yankees. They said the DH for the New York Yankees is Rod Luber. And then they said the DH was on the Tepeda for the Mets. So we got to the first inning. So there was two outs. And I believe the guy, I think Nettles were in front of me. Yeah, and then when I got up, so there was a basis loaded, and I won. I went through the 3-2 pitch. And I went to first base. And so we used to play it, being at first base. And I just waited for somebody to bring me my glove. And Ellie said, what are you doing? I said, I'm waiting for my glove. He said, no, you come back to the bench. And you sit down with me. I said, what do I do on the bench? Like that. He said, we'll watch the game until you get up to bat again. So I'm freezing with him. And Bobby Mercer, I don't know if you remember or ever knew, that Bobby always had a hot water he always kept it on the bench. And it was, he got playing center field, and I got the hot water bottle, and, I'm holding it like that, and it feels good. But, the wind's blowing in, and it's 30 degrees outside, and I said, Ellie, I'm freezing down here. What else can I do? He said, well, because, down in Spring Canyon, you could run in the outdoor and get yourself loose, and of course you could do kind of everything in the game. So, I went up to the clubhouse, and Vince, who was a clubhouse guy, I'm sitting down in the clubhouse because, of course, we didn't have TV back then to watch the games. I was listening to the game on the radio for like 2 minutes. And, a lot of the guys were not playing, went into the clubhouse. They asked me, what am I doing? I said, I'm sitting here so I can hit again. And then it was like a couple of hitters before me. So I'm taking swings in the clubhouse. And the clubhouse is so small, I don't know if I was hitting anything or what. And I was going to hit again. And I remember I grounded out or lined out or whatever. And then I did the same thing. I went up to the clubhouse. And then the next time I got up, I got a base hit. So, and then after the ball game was over with, I'm never going to forget. We lost 15-5. Bell was struggling. We come back from up with Lauderdale. It's like 85, 90 degrees. And you cut the ball, so it's 30 degrees. And everybody was dying, of course. Everybody wanted to get the game with quick. So, I come back to the clubhouse, and there was like 40, 50 reporters around me. And the ball players, the other guys in the team, was looking and said, what did this guy do? And they started asking me about being the DH. I said, I have no idea. I said, I just got up with that, driving a few runs. Unfortunately, we lost. And then Morty Bell runs down from the from upstairs, and he said that the Hall of Fame wanted the baseball bat. And I said, baby, I'm not going to give you my baseball bat because back then, they just gave us like 10, 15, no, they gave us like 12 bats. And that's all the bats we had for the month. It's not like now they have like 200-300 bats, and they can just give them away to people. So, I said, Morty, my bats came into Boston. I looked at the bats. This was a great bat. It's going to, have like 40, 50 hits for me. I'm going to hit 300. He said, no, we got to give it to the Hall of Fame. I said, Morty, this baseball that I used to in the game. Like that, he said, well, you got to use another one. So he took my bat and he gave it to the Hall of Fame. And now I'm in the Hall of Fame the wrong way rather than the right way. But I got all my stuff, the balls in it. I think they got my jersey, that's a baseball bat. So to this day, all my friends are going to the Hall of Fame, and so many people write to me, well, I saw your display and Cooper step. And I said, thank you. And then it kept on evolving another year, the 5th year, the 10th year, and the 25th year. And then Sports Illustrated wanted to do a major feature on me about 10 years ago. And now in 5 years, it'd be 50 years. And now, finally, we got somebody in the Hall of Fame. And now I'm a whole baseball player now. A hope that both leagues will adopt it and make it a great position. I love the position. There's going to be quite a few more DHs in the Hall of Fame. I screwed up the game in 73, and I feel like I still screwed it up, but now I'm a football player.
The irony for Blumberg is that one benefit of instituting the DH was that it helps protect players with injuries and gives them a chance for a longer career. Blomberg's career was cut short by injuries long before the DH took its full importance. He played his last game at age 30 in 1978. While there's still plenty of debate about how to evaluate the DH against the position player at MVP time every year, what Ronnie said is true. They are whole players, not half ones. I don't think there will be a long run of closers and DHs now entering the Hall, but the best of the best now have, and will continue to have, their place in the game and in the Hall of Fame. Thank you all for listening. Until next time, I'm Sweeney Murdy.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.